And welcome back to another episode of the Wonder Podcast, the podcast where we break down and review films all in one big, long, unbroken take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next-door neighbor, my lifelong best friend.
Kramer England.
Okay. Oh, boy. The format.
I love it.
First of all, the format's back. We're getting to be old guys. We're almost 40 years old.
Yes.
And I went and saw the format play a concert a few weeks ago. If people don't know about the format, maybe you know about Fun, the band. Yes. Fun, like Some Nights and we Are Young. Before Fun, Nate Ruess was in the format.
Yep.
And they're back. They have a new album coming out. But I wore this shirt because this movie is a kind of tribute to and satire of the format of the slasher genre.
I like it. I see the connection. I think that's good. Yeah.
Except what Randy says is there's a formula to it.
He says the
formula. So
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, okay, yeah. We're doing Scream by Wes Craven from what, 1996?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Cool. We're 90s guys. We did Blair Witch Project, and now we did. Yep. I mean, these were very seminal films for us. Scream was a big one.
Scream was a big one.
Do you remember when you first saw Scream?
I remember when I first saw, I'm pretty sure I saw it at your house, but okay. I do remember that the first time I saw the opening scene of Scream, like one of my brothers had rented it and my parents were gone. And I think it was like a Saturday morning, and me and my brother Chandler, like, let's watch it. And so like we turned it on and I was eating cereal. And this was the opening scene. And when they show the boyfriend, I couldn't eat my cereal anymore. I was like, the boyfriend gets killed. I was done. And then we stopped watching it. I don't know why, but
I don't know if you were in on this with us, but like, I know that me and Kevin Barton, at least, we were like weirdly obsessed with this movie.
You would tell me about it all the time. You like told me the entire movie before I saw the movie. So I was like, oh, I know this part. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is actually what I would do with a lot of films.
If
I liked a movie, you can rest assured that I would tell my friends every scene that happens in the movie before they saw it.
Well, I would do that too. That's just how we were. Yeah.
I think like Jesse and Lincoln and those guys always bring up the fact that I told them every scene of The Matrix before they saw it. But luckily you and I saw that together. So.
Yes, we did. Yeah. Yeah. That was a good one.
But this is, for some reason, I don't know why this movie, I was obsessed with this movie. I still am a big fan of the franchise. Every time a new Scream movie is coming out, I go and see it. I will say, like, I'm aware, even as a fan, that, like, progressively the sequels work less and less.
Because
it sort of just has that, it's like, it's a good thing that fundamentally it's a satire. Fundamentally, it is sort of a send-up of genre tropes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And because Scream sort of has like the same narrative problem that the Alien franchise has, where when it happens to Ripley once, it's and she survives, it's like, okay. Then the sequel's like, you wake her up just to have the exact same nightmare all over again. And it's like, geez, this woman is really unlucky. Then Alien 3 happens and it's like, oh my gosh, can she ever wake up when it's like not, when it's not this? Can she ever just have a, you know? And then it's like, they resurrect her for Alien Resurrection and they're like, aliens again. It's like, she's never not awake during an alien attack for, you know? And I feel like that's Sidney Prescott's story too, is it's like, every few years, some jackass needs to put that mask on. And it's just like, she just can't get out of just this sort of Groundhog Day scenario that she's in. It's like, can we be done like with me having to deal with ghost face killers? Because but that's why I still think the first one is, obviously it's the OG, and I think it's the best in the franchise by far, because it's still got the like, the freshness of the concept and the motivation for the killers is stronger, I think, and more interesting.
It feels more new than the others. I mean I've really only seen 1, 2, and 3. I haven't seen anything after that. I'm not like a huge It's not like I have anything against it. I just haven't really cared as much. But this one really does kind of, it sets the tone. And for me, I didn't grow up loving it as much as you did. And I have to say that after watching it, it was last night or the night before, it's not as, it hasn't held up as well as I thought it might.
And I had the same experience.
but I do, the ending of this movie is like amazing. The last sequence is so good and so well constructed and paced, and everything is just, it's like once they get to, what is it, Randy's house or whatever?
I think it's Stu's house. Once they get to Stu's house, everything from that point on is really great.
It's like amazing. And like the beginning, it's just kind of like some of the things, like it is also just, it's not trying to be completely serious, but it's not trying to be completely funny. And it is amazing how often it pulls it off.
You mentioned a bit of trivia that I was not aware of, which is that the original name for this movie was Scary Movie, which obviously went on to their Scary Movie franchise. But like, you know, and this movie's definitely not a Hot Shots, you know, Naked Gun style scary movie type satire. It's a much more like subtle. I mean, it's like a half serious proper slasher film, and then half satire of the slasher genre, you know?
Yeah. It's crazy. Like I said, how they pull that off. Cause a lot of times it could be very lopsided, but this one seems to toe the line really well.
Well, and it's weird because a lot of the online commentary about this film, you know, 30 years later, is how people completely misunderstood it. And it was meant to be a complete satire, and that this franchise was never meant to be taken seriously at all. And I think that that analysis is a little bit reductive. Like, I think that boiling it down to just being like the entire franchise is just making fun of horror slasher franchise, like I don't think that that's true. It is and it isn't. Like, the franchise is meta, like all the way through. I think we're six films deep now, and they just keep getting deeper and deeper into the meta commentary of like every new killer is always like someone who's obsessed with the Stab films, which are the franchise of films that exist inside of the Scream universe that are based on the Woodsboro murders from the first movie. Mm-hmm. And there'll be like kids that are obsessed with the Stab movies who reenact them, and they're the new killers, you know, and that sort of like Inception three levels deep on the meta commentary, I think is fun. But that's what I would basically say is that, like, overall, it's a franchise that is having fun with its concept and not taking itself too seriously, but it's still aiming at having some like pretty effective sequences that are chilling and, you know, some good scares and
You can't say that it's a complete parody or satire, because the moments that are scary are scary. And they're treated as something that is scary, and they're done very well, obviously, by Wes Craven, who knows he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
But then you have some things in there that are pretty funny, like poking fun at it, poking fun at the genre. But then you also have like things that are like, oh, they give a reason for why she says, you know, some dumb girl is, you know, going upstairs when she should just be going outside, and she locks herself in, which is her own fault. Which gives it like, oh, that's why she's going upstairs. So it's kind of, it's very meta. It's taking it on all sides. It's kind of doing everything all at once and somehow pulling it off.
Yeah. And I think that's the impressive thing as an adult when I watch it, is that balancing of tones. I think Kevin Williamson's screenplay is kind of iconic. Yeah. You know, like it definitely launched his career. It's so 90s and like a very, there's so many lines where I just was like, oh, like one of my favorites is, she's got her bubble butt boyfriend, Billy. Like, that girl in the bathroom. That always gets to me. I'm like, was that a thing that teenagers were saying in the 90s? Or is that just something that Kevin Williamson thought a teenage girl would say? She's got her bubble butt boyfriend, Billy. Like, what?
Yeah, that does. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember anybody talking like that when we were alive at that time.
I remember like as if I remember, you know, cause like, that's like, there's a good line when, what's his name? Matthew Lillard says to Jamie Kennedy, as if, like, you and there's, like, you know, stuff like that. But, like, I don't bubble butt boyfriend Billy. I think that's just a Kevin Williamson invention.
Probably.
And it's great. It's an iconic line. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know what it was about this film for me as a kid that fascinated me so much, because I truly was terrified of this movie as a kid.
I really
like took it seriously. I didn't read it as a satire on the genre. I found, like, Stu and Billy, you know, spoilers, if you haven't seen Scream, go watch Scream.
Yeah.
It's 30 years old. It's a classic. You don't have to watch the whole franchise. Watch the first movie. Billy and Stu are the killers. but I found them, like, terrifying. I found them, I found the idea of, like, especially we lived in, like, the Columbine world.
And
the idea of, like, these two high school kids who are, like, popular and conventionally attractive and all this, and kind of like jocks, just turning into psychotic killers and having the idea of them, like, plotting together kind of psychologically scared me, I think, as a kid.
Yeah. Well, and I think when, I mean, we were, okay, 96, what, we were like nine when it came out. And if I'm remembering correctly, it's probably one of the big horror movies that came out when we were able to remember what they were. Yeah. And whenever those come out and you see them for the first time, it really burns in your brain. And you know, whether or not it's funny or scary, it affects you. So I think that this came out at the time when we were very aware of everything that was going on. And so it really does, like, stick with you, like, and it makes it more scary, especially because when you're younger, you don't really get the, you're just terrified of, oh my gosh, there's somebody who could be murdering people right now. So
that's the thing, is, like, instead of it being like a haunted house movie or zombies or monster, the slasher genre is this thing of, like, there could be a guy who, just a psychotic guy who wants to get in your house. And the thing about this film that really got to me is, even with Halloween, with Friday the 13th, with Nightmare on Elm Street, Wes Craven's other franchise, there is a supernatural element. Freddy is killing kids in their dreams. Michael Myers seems to have something going on with him that's supernatural. We never quite know what. They try to give an answer to it in The Curse of Michael Myers, and that's stupid. But, like, I think it's more fun to just think of Michael Myers as, like, we don't really know what he is. And Jason's definitely, like, a living dead character. There's something about Billy and Stu being real guys, and also there being two of them, and that being the reveal that, like, they're just two teenagers who really like scary movies and who felt slighted by different things. Like, I even clocked this time that, like, I've always known Billy's motivation, but I was like, is Stu just crazy? And I clocked that, like, Casey Becker dumped Stu for Steve, and that's why Stu had to go out with Tatum, and, you know, like, all this different stuff that I was like, oh, Stu's definitely got some, like, petty grievances too. But I do think Stu's just kind of nuts as well.
I think he is. Yeah. And he follows Billy. So it's also, this is a fun movie on rewatch because you get more of those things, you know, like, just knowing that Billy and Stu are the killers. Immediately, I was watching everything that they did a little bit closer, and I was trying to figure out which one was which, who killed who, and, you know, who was it that did all that, or who was it that killed each person. So it was kind of interesting watching it that time,
because I do, and it's like, are both of them present at these different things? But, like, I think you actually can put the timeline together, and I think that they initially stay, like, they only have one of them go to each one so that they both have alibis. And so it's like, I think Stu does the first killing. I think that it's probably initially, because it's Casey, and it's and I even think that there's a line later on where Billy says, like, well, I was with he's like, I was with Sid last night. He's like, so I couldn't be me, you know? But.
Well, and wait, does Tatum say that she was with him?
Or maybe it's that. Maybe it's that. I can't remember. It might be Tatum says that she's with Stu. And Billy's the one who shows up at Sydney's window because he's been out. So maybe that was the offer. Is Billy offered to kill Casey and Steve for Stu if Stu would join him? Yeah,
and maybe he was calling. You know, I'm sure that they both did it in tandem. One's calling, one's they're both spying on him, whatever. But
those details to me for some reason get under my skin. Like the element of hearing the killer's voice over the phone is because that's the other thing about the slasher genre is you don't often hear that. Like a lot of times the killer is silent and is just sort of like this silent stalker. You know, we've talked about how like the Terminator is a stalker film. Like he's just sort of this presence. And even when when Freddy Krueger talks, it's like, he's got like a monster voice. He's like, there's something about that Ghostface voice, even though it's like that is iconic. And the idea of like just these kids, almost like it's a game for them, like they're just messing around and just screwing with people is really, I don't know. It's really disturbing to me.
It is. And I did notice that as well. The voice of the killer, you hear him, like he's getting hurt and he, you know, it adds something to it of realism, you know, because Michael Myers doesn't say anything. Yeah. He's just like, you never hear anything from him. So having that makes it more real and you know, what would actually happen. So.
Yeah. So obviously, again, you know, spoilers, it's whatever. We start this movie out with an iconic opening. This is a very famous opening scene. And I really do like the way that this movie gets right to business. You know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's a very strong cold open. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, usually, you know, in a lot of horror movies, a lot of slasher movies like Halloween or anything, it's really about the buildup. And sometimes they wait till like the midpoint to really reveal the killer and have things start happening, which works really well in a lot of other movies. But this one, they just immediately get into it. And I have always really liked that about this movie. Is it just like, all right, you see the killer pretty immediately and you have a scene that really hooks you in. And it's not really, you know, like Jaws is kind of like showing you bits and pieces, but it doesn't show the monster until, you know, the midpoint. And this one just goes straight into it, which I think works really well for this film.
Yeah, and the satire is on display right away too, because if you think about audiences in 1996, the film was marketed with Drew Barrymore as a lead. And Drew Barrymore was, next to maybe Courtney Cox, the most famous person in the film. Like a lot of these other actors, Neve Campbell was just getting her start with Party of Five on TV, so she was sort of an up-and-comer. What's her name that plays Tatum was not really well known at this time. She's kind of an unknown.
Rose McGowan.
Rose McGowan, Matthew Lillard, Skeet Ulrich was kind of like he'd been in a few other movies, but it was Ulrich, whatever his name is, however you say his name.
I don't know.
Yeah. But Drew Barrymore was like the big name in the film. And I think a lot of audience members were surprised when the movie opens and it's like, oh, we're doing Drew Barrymore right now.
Yeah.
And it's already a commentary on audience expectation and how you think that obviously Drew Barrymore is going to be our final girl. She's going to be the main character of the film. And no, she's just the cold open. And they're already breaking rules of, they're breaking the format of.
And so Drew Barrymore was actually she was initially cast as Neve Campbell's role.
Sydney Prescott.
Sydney, thank you. She was initially cast as Sydney, and then she like called up Wes Craven and was like, I don't think this is, for some reason she kind of took back what she wanted. She's like, I don't think I'm a good fit for Sydney, but I want to play, you know, the first character. Is it Courtney? I think it's
Casey.
Casey, thank you.
Casey Becker.
Yeah, she's like, I think I should be Casey. And they were like, well, Casey dies in the first scene. And she's like, yeah, think about Psycho. Like Psycho was the first one to really kill off their main character very early on in the movie, which was a shock to everybody. And so they were like, oh yeah, that's like an awesome idea. And it all came together. But this is a really great way to kind of like, because I remember even when the movie came out, so much Drew Barrymore all over the place. And everybody was like, she's in it for 5 minutes and then she dies.
She was at the height of her stardom in the mid 90s. Yeah. She was at the height of her fame, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was a big shock, but it has lived on as like an iconic film opening, but I love it. It's like, we get like this movie opens with the phone ringing and she's talking to this guy immediately. Mm-hmm. And he's immediately asking her, you know, what she's doing and what her favorite scary movie is and all these iconic lines. And, you know, I do like this, the Jiffy Pop thing, like as like sort of a timer in the scene and like a tension builder, although it does bother me when she walks back over to it at one point, but then gets distracted and doesn't grab it. I'm always like, just take it off the burner. I know
you've just grabbed it, moved it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but I love, and this is sort of a staple of Ghostface now in the franchise, but it starts here where like Ghostface will always do this thing where he calls people on the phone and he starts off very calm.
Yes.
And there's always a turn where the person either hangs up on him or is being like too flippant or ignoring him or not taking him seriously enough, where all of a sudden he has this like harsh turn. He'll say something like, you know, to Casey Becker, he's like, how about I gut you like a fish? You know, like you know, and it's like something that's really, you think, you know, in the days when you had a home telephone that people would call, if someone called you on the phone and said that, and you'd be really disturbed and scared, you know, nowadays you would just not answer because it would say scam likely or you.
No ID. It's a great, it really is a great way to establish the tone and the tone of the character. And this, the guy who voices him, Roger Jackson or Roger L. Jackson. He initially was a temp voice. Wes Craven was like, oh, this guy's like awesome. So we got to keep him on there. And he would make the calls from a place in the hat, like a location on the set. And he would literally talk to the actors as they are giving their lines so that they could react off of something and that they didn't know where he was or like who this guy was. They kind of use that for their advantage.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's actually going to be the Wonder Funner for tomorrow. Okay. Everybody will. This will be published after. But anyway, it's a pretty cool little thing that they used. And now he's been in all the movies. That voice, the voice.
I know. And it's just like this suspension of disbelief thing that you have to go like, there's like a little weird box that if you put it in front of your mouth, it makes you sound exactly like this guy, no matter who you are.
I swear they sold something like that. The Scream voice changer. And it didn't sound anything like that guy.
It's because it's magic technology. You can't do that. Like you could do it now with OpenAI. You could now voice clone. There was no such thing as a thing that you just put in front of your. It's like the Home Alone 2, the talk boy.
Yeah.
Like the way that he uses it. It's like, it doesn't work like that in real life.
Yeah. Mr. McAllister, the father. Yeah, that doesn't work.
Yeah. But this was definitely like a piece of tech that everyone was like, I want that. Does that exist?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
No. Like they can, there's, a, we, I think Kevin Barton had one.
Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah. That's great. By the way, our friend Kevin would dress up like Ghostface and hide in his house. He would like invite us over to hang out at his house and we would get there and he'd be hidden somewhere in the basement and we would like walk around in the basement and then he would pop out of a closet dressed like Ghostface and chase us around the basement. And it was terrifying. About that.
It was. And he was tall. He was bigger than us. He was really tall. And it was scary.
It was very scary too, because like we would be like, okay, we're done playing, and he wouldn't break character. And we'd be like, we're not playing anymore, stop, and he would just like keep doing it, and it was very scary. Kevin and I were kind of obsessed with this movie. So this guy sort of makes himself known as a menace by saying things like you know, what's your name, and she says why, and he goes, because I want to know who I'm looking at.
Yeah,
you know, stuff like that. Yeah. He's always got these great little things. But then she tells him that her boyfriend's coming over and he plays football and he's going to beat him up. And then he's like, why don't you go to the back patio and turn on the light? And that's where Steve is. Poor little Steve. He's tied up.
Yeah, you know? He's been beaten up.
Yeah. And they've got Steve. And this is what probably makes me think, or has always made me think, like it would have to be Billy and Stu.
Yeah.
Because I think they'd have to be working in tandem to make sure they can take Steve down.
Yeah.
And also, I think there's one of them in the back running the game while one of them maybe is, I don't know.
I think they're both doing something to make this all work.
because they do the thing where they ring her doorbell a bunch or they knock a bunch on the front door, and then, you know, and like Ghostface is moving from one side of the house to the other really fast. But there's something about the Scream movies where, because they are a meta commentary on the slasher genre, but they're meant to sort of exist in, like, it's like people who are, I guess it's just like the characters in the film are aware of the slasher genre. They're aware of Halloween and Freddy and Jason.
Yeah. And even Wes Craven, like they mispronounce it, 'cause they say, what is it? It's, they don't say Wes Craven. They say Wes, who's the other? Oh my gosh. Who did Halloween?
Oh, Carpenter.
Oh, they say Wes Carpenter. Yeah. So they kind of like, so they're aware that he is around. Again, the meta-ness of this whole thing is, I love, they're very aware.
I love when Henry Winkler runs into Freddy Krueger as the as the janitor. That's probably the most overt, like, satirical, silly moment where the janitor is literally Freddy Krueger.
That part is pretty hilarious.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And it's a really, you know, I like the way that, like, I mean, boy, when they reveal Steve dead after she gets the question wrong, she answers the question wrong of who's the killer in Friday the 13th. She says Jason. And this is something that a lot of people don't know. Everyone assumes that that's the right answer, but it's Jason's mom. It's Mrs. Voorhees.
Mrs. Voorhees.
And she was the killer in the first one. It was a twist. And that's also foreshadowing for this film, that, like, the twist ending, that you don't know who the killer is going to be. And, they gut this kid, they rip his insides open. And, and it is, this movie
pretty
is
gruesome.
This movie's pretty gruesome. Yeah. This movie's got some pretty gory, I think that stuff kind of stuck with me as a kid too. 'Cause it just felt, there's something about, like, the Halloween movies where, like, when Michael Myers sticks someone to a wall with a butcher knife, my brain's like, that's not how that works. You know? Just like, I don't think you could do that.
Yeah.
But, like, there's something about the violence in the Scream franchise that just feels more real. It just feels like that's what that would actually look like. Yeah. And they even play with that in this movie, like the difference between the tone of the corn syrup and the tone of the blood when Billy and Stu are actually stabbing each other at the end. Yeah. And, like, you know, they have the commentary when they're talking about, when they're watching the movie, and they're like, oh, they always make it too red.
Yeah. The blood is too red. Yeah.
The blood is too. And then, you know, I've always liked that about these movies, but
Casey
has a little chase with Ghostface in her house. She makes it outside. Her parents are coming home and right before she can get to scream to her parents, and she's been choked by Ghostface. So her, you know, vocal cords aren't really working. She gets stabbed and tackled, and her parents are looking for her. The house is filled with smoke, and her mom picks up the phone to call 911, and she can hear her daughter.
Yeah. Which is like, Oh, that's, again, like, this is the section that is treated very seriously.
Yeah.
I think this whole first part is treated pretty seriously. And the fact that the mom hears her daughter is just pretty heartbreaking. Like,
it's really a well orchestrated sequence. And again, like, I think Kevin Williamson's script is really good here, that how close she comes to being saved, and the near miss, you know, and that she almost gets away, you know, she makes her way outside, and she is able to fight him off a few times, but then her parents run outside to see where she is, and her mom screams, and we see
her tied up in a tree. Yeah,
she's hanging and her intestines are hanging out.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good.
Yeah,
she does take off the mask of the killer before, so that makes me think it's Stu, because she kind of has this look like she knows who it is. So,
right. And I think she would know Stu and Billy, but I think the idea that it's the guy she dumped for Steve is really, like, messed up, you know?
Yeah.
Yep. And, like, thinking of Stu's face, like, smiling at her or something, 'cause he's such a weirdo.
Yeah.
Then we launch into our main characters, and I think we go to, do we go to Sydney's house next?
Yeah, we go to, she's in her room, and then Billy shows up and she's like, "Oh, what are you doing?" And they have this weird conversation that doesn't I don't know. It's like they're basically he's telling her that he's going to be patient with her, and
yeah,
and they're, you know, he's waiting for her when she's ready to give herself to him, and like, you know, it's just kind of it's a weird. I definitely got a lot more in this viewing, and this whole scene was like, what?
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting how heavy-handed Kevin Williamson is with like what a creep Billy is, and also like every scene Billy's in, Billy drops a bunch of movie trivia. Like he's always talking about movies, and he's all Billy's always relating his whole world like through movies. You know, in this scene, he's talking to Sydney about how they used to have an R rating that was on its way to an NC-17, but everything lately's been PG. And we sort of find out that it's only been a year since a traumatic thing happened to Sydney, and that's why she sort of shut down, maybe. But like, Olivia had never seen Scream before.
Oh, okay.
We were watching it the first time with her, so I was curious to see like, is this going to work for her? Is she going to like easily spot this? Or, and by the end, she honestly, when I asked her, I was like, so who do you think was the killer? She's like, well, I thought it was Billy early on, but then I thought that's way too obvious. And that's way too like simple. She goes, and then when they sort of like, they showed that they were using him as a red herring, I sort of like let go of that. And she goes, and then especially the thing that happens in the third act when he gets slashed up, I was like, oh, I guess it's not him. And I was like, so it did work. I was like,
yeah,
the misdirect like got you, even though there are like really clear reasons why him being stabbed after they hook up at the party doesn't work. Like, his shirt is like fully intact and it like, doesn't have
it makes no sense.
Yeah, like it doesn't look like he's been stabbed at all. No. But if you're
I get it. Like it's a traumatic thing that's happening, so she wouldn't be thinking that. And there's also somebody who literally does want to kill her. But like when you look back, you're like, it's fairly obvious that Billy is the killer, but we all missed it.
The first time you're watching the movie, when he turns around and he's got blood all over his shirt, you don't necessarily clock that there's not like a hole in the shirt where the stab wound should be. Mm-hmm. You just go like, oh, he's covered in blood and he's dying. And it's sort of like Mission Impossible when John Voight like looks at his hands and his, you know, like Ethan, like he spilled the, you know.
Yeah,
you know, it's like you just sort of accept it because it's like, well, there's the blood.
Yeah.
It seemed to kind of work on her. Like, I don't think she ever at any point suspected Stu. I think most people, she was like, I thought it was like probably Randy. She's like, but then like, I thought like, I don't know, maybe it's someone I haven't thought of yet. And like, I was like, so that's, the movie does a good job at keeping first time viewers guessing.
Yeah.
Which is one of its like one of the screenplay's like big goals is part of the formula of these films is everyone's a suspect and you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And especially like if you're relating it to like Friday the 13th, because with Halloween, we're not guessing who's the killer. We know who it is. It's Michael Myers who escaped from a mental institution. And with Nightmare on Elm Street, we're not guessing who it is, but with movies like When a Stranger Calls, things like that, we're guessing.
I think that's what one of the reasons why it makes this movie fun is because it's a slasher movie with a whodunit aspect of the who is the killer? Like what is the that's kind of it makes the mystery of is it this person? Is it this person? You're looking for clues of who it could be.
Yeah,
and I think the first viewing is always kind of you're never sure, so you're always kind of guessing. And that again adds to the fun of the movie.
Yeah. So anyway, we meet Sydney and Billy, and Billy's weird and creepy from the beginning. But then we go to school, and everyone finds out that Casey Becker and Steve died and were murdered. And what's interesting is this is where we sort of find out it's almost a year to the day that Sydney Prescott's mother was murdered.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can't remember when we get this information because I think it's a little bit later, but
I think we hear a news reporter saying it.
Yeah.
And like friends have said it. They've been like, it's almost a year since, but they don't finish the sentence. And then I'm pretty sure a news reporter is like almost a year to the day after. Yeah. And
I think she goes to school and then she like goes home. Right. And she sees the news report on her mom. And this is where we find out that she was murdered about a year ago, and a person Cotton Weary
was
which he's in it for like 2 seconds, and I was like, hey, I know that.
I think that's before Liev Schreiber was like a movie star.
Yeah, you know, it was, but then
he he went on to play Cotton Weary in the second and third movie, and Cotton has like a pretty big role in the second and third movie.
That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, he does come back, and like he's anyway. But he's there, and we find out that Sydney testified against Cotton Weary, and he's very much like he's in jail and he's kind of on death row, I think. So this is definitely clunky exposition. Like,
but it's also something that you can clock that like Cotton from behind sort of looks a lot like Billy. They have the same haircut and like they have the same build. And Sydney's whole thing is that she saw somebody leaving her house wearing Cotton's jacket.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. 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 So it's again, like it works. It's fine. It's not the worst thing. It is kind of funny. This whole thing with Sydney's mom. I thought it was funny on this watch, especially since everybody's like, get over your dead mom, Sydney. It's been a year.
I know.
I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys, her mom was brutally murdered. Like, that's not a thing you get over in a year.
Or ever.
Tell her to get over it. Like and that could have been part of like I felt like that was a little bit part of the parody of it all.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, just get over it, Sydney. I'm like, man, that is horrible. Why would you ever tell anybody that?
It is true. It's like everyone's just kind of like, Sid, come on. Like,
it's been a year, Sid. She was only your mom.
Yeah. But there's this thing of Sydney grappling with the character of her mother too that's really interesting, where like she has to deal with the fact that her mom was cheating on her dad. And you know, like, but that doesn't mean her mom deserved to be killed.
No.
But she has to deal with the fact that her mom was not who she thought she was, and all this stuff. Yeah. But Sydney feels unsafe because it's, you know, it's a weird coincidence that two of her classmates were murdered the night before the 1 year anniversary of her mom being killed. And so Tatum says that she'll come over and spend the night, you know, and Sydney's dad's out of town. And Sydney's like, I feel weird being at home alone. So Tatum's going to come over and they're going to watch a movie, and Sydney takes a nap and falls asleep, and she wakes up at night, phone rings, and guess who?
Tatum first.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's Tatum first. And she's like, sorry, practice ran over, and it's like 7:30 or something.
Yeah.
And then she gets another call.
And she says, we can watch All the Right Moves with Tom Cruise. If you pause it just right, you can see his penis.
Yeah, that's right. That's weird.
This is another one of these movies that I have a lot of the lines, like really, I've seen this movie. So like, I got
burned
this
movie in your brain.
Yeah. But yeah, she gets another call, and it is our guy, and or our boys. We don't know.
Yeah.
And this is an interesting sequence too, where this is where she says the kind of iconic thing of like, I don't like scary movies, and they're all the same. It's always some dumb girl who's running up the stairs when she should be running out the front door.
Yeah.
But he starts saying things that he can like see her, you know, and so she goes out on her front porch, and she's like picking her nose, and she's like, tell me what I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
You know. And I've often thought, like, is this when she lets him in, or is he already in there? Like, I don't know.
My thought is that he was already in there, but I don't know either. It's very possible.
Yeah. It's a scary thing about Ghostface is that he's often just like already hiding in people's homes when he calls them, and he'll often like pop out of a closet or something. And that element too just scares me, that he's just like that. Whoever it is just chilling.
Yeah.
You know,
they're watching you.
Yeah. But she goes back inside, Ghostface pops out, and she locks the door, you know.
Yeah.
Ghostface pops out. She can't get out the front door because she's locked herself in.
Yeah.
She runs upstairs, and she
does
sort of
the thing that she said happens in all the scary movies.
Yeah. She sort of uses a door to, like, barricade.
Yeah.
Which is just kind of a fun thing that they set up earlier, because her dad tries to get into her room earlier, and we see that her closet door is positioned in a way that it can stop the bedroom door from opening. So that's kind of a fun thing that they platform, and she's trying to get out the window while Ghostface is trying to get through, and then she turns around and he's gone. And so she hesitantly like goes back out, which is, this is crazy. It's like, don't go back out there.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah. She goes downstairs, opens the front door, and the face is there, but it's Dewey.
Yeah. Cause she had called the police, which we forgot. Like she called them.
She used her computer to,
That's right. Oh yeah. Ooh, fancy internet. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. She couldn't call the police because the phone line was busy.
Yeah.
Which, hey, again, you know, when you had the house line, it's like, if one of them was being used, can't use it in another room. So she had to get on the computer and call the police. Dewey shows up, but this scares off Ghostface, and
they find his mask because he's holding the mask. It looks like he's right at the door. Yeah.
And then she goes back up to her room and Billy pops in. And I remember the first time I saw this, I was like, immediately, I was like, what's he doing there? What's he? I was like, why is he there? And he was wearing like a black shirt. I was like, oh, what, you know? Yeah. And while he's hugging and comforting Sydney, a cell phone falls out of his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, watching this the other night, I'm like, did he do this on purpose? Like, does he, is he like, cause it's like so like sloppy, you know?
Yeah. It is kind of like, is this all part of his plan?
Yeah. You know, because then he can be like, they look at the phone records of that phone and they don't find any calls to, you know, and I wonder if it's like part of his way of like, it's intent. It's like Joker, like intentionally getting caught.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think you could say that it was all purposeful, right? Like it was, it gets him off the hook because they do check the phone and he wasn't there and all, you know, all that different stuff. So you could say it definitely was intentional.
Yeah, David Arquette's really fun in this movie as Dewey. Yeah. He's a weird, charming character, you know, young deputy on the force. They, you know, take Sydney in to kind of comfort her and give her some hot cocoa, and they take Billy in with his dad and, you know, question him and stuff like that. And
I did think it was funny that they could see each other in the police station.
Yeah.
Like, let me just put your attacker here. And then I'll put you over just kind of across the room, but you guys can still see each other and interact. Yeah. I was like, I don't think they do that.
Who knows? One time I had to identify a guy because I witnessed a mugging and I called the police.
Wow.
Yeah. I called the police and then they like, I described to them who I saw attacking this other person.
Yeah.
And they were like, we just picked someone up that matches that description. They're like, so get in the back seat of this car and we're going to just pull him over here and pull him out of the car and just look at him and just tell us if that's him. And I was so scared because he was like 10 feet away from me. And I was like looking through the back window of a police cruiser, like over the seat, like I don't want this guy to see my face.
Yeah. But it was terrifying.
And it was the guy I saw. I was like, yeah, that's him.
I was like, take me away, please.
So I who knows,
maybe they could. I just thought that was funny. It wasn't anything bad about the movie.
I think we skipped a scene too where like the iconic scene where all the kids are at like the water fountain talking about you know, who it could be, and Randy is, you know, he's the guy that works the video store that's basically Blockbuster, and he's explaining, you know,
played by Jamie Kennedy.
Yeah. Jimmy Kennedy's honestly great in this movie. Randy's a great character.
He is a great character. Yeah.
Yeah. But we see the weirdness of, I like the way that scene plays out too, that Stu's kind of giving too much away and you can see Billy kind of looking at him like, dude, shut up.
Yeah.
Cause Stu, you know.
Yeah. I clocked that for sure. It's more of them talking non-verbally, communicating non-verbally to each other. Cause Billy, you can see, is pretty pissed at Stu, and Stu's like, what? Like, he doesn't realize how much he's given away.
Well, he hits him and he says, it's called tact, dude.
Yeah.
Which is almost like, hey, come on, my girlfriend's mom was murdered. But he's also like, shut up, dude.
You take it as him defending his girlfriend, but in reality, it's more like, dude, shut up. You're going to give us away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which that kind of stuff is fun on rewatch for this film. Yeah. But yeah, so that's a nice little fun mid-movie sequence. And then We have this sequence at the school the day after that doesn't really make sense to me. Like, I don't get how Ghostface is in the girl's bathroom waiting for Sydney. I just am like, what are the odds that Sydney's going to run to that bathroom and cry? I just, you know, like.
Well, and there definitely seem to be just terrorizing her because, did they really want to kill her? Because they initially, I mean, it ultimately ends up they want to kill her on the anniversary of her mom's death.
Right.
So like, are they just terrifying her to make her seem crazy? Like, I'm not exactly sure. I feel like this is like, you know what? It's a little, we need a scene here to like add in that like makes it scary.
Cause
there's
nothing
that happens.
It feels like a filler scene. And I remember this, like what this scene gives us is the look at the boots, which become a big thing.
It's
like the boots step down off of the toilet and then the cloak slowly goes down, which I like that image. I think it's a fun image, but I'm always like, so wait, was like Billy or was Stu just sitting in the girl's bathroom waiting for like, hopefully Sydney to come into the bathroom?
Yeah.
And she doesn't even say anything when she's in there. So it's like, how does he know? It's, I don't know. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. This is where we get the bubble butt boyfriend Billy line.
Yeah. Which, if that was Billy, he heard that as well.
Yeah.
I don't think it was Billy because she runs into him, right?
Yeah, she saw him in the hallway.
That's
him trying to explain to her, like, Sid, like, it wasn't me, you know?
Yeah. Get over your mom's death, Sid.
Get over Sid, stop being sad about your mom who died.
Getting murdered.
Who I killed.
It's not a big deal.
But yeah, this one was always kind of like, it's also weird, like how there's like the boys in the hallway who are running through the hallway with the ghost face,
the mask
on. And I'm like, how do they know what the killer looks like? I know that the news eventually reports on it, but
yeah, well, and they do say, this is what I like as well. They do say the chief or whatever, or Dewey is like, you can find these at any Halloween store. Like,
yeah,
they're like a dime a dozen, you know? So I think once somebody heard about it, then they were able to get that look, which I thought was a great way to use that to their advantage.
It's a thing that they play around with a lot in the franchise. Like in the subsequent movies, especially as the Stab movies become popular, they play around a lot with like sequences that take place on Halloween and lots of people are dressed up as Ghostface.
Yeah.
And that's a fun way to be like, which is one of these, you know, there's a whole sequence in the second movie where they're at the premiere of the Stab movie and everyone's wearing a Ghostface mask.
Yeah.
And that's a fun, you know, way to play with.
And then hitting the killer gets killed. Yeah. I remember that.
Our next big kill is the principal, but he's already, at this point, he's already called off school because I think that they, do they find another victim or something? How does this happen?
Well, it was because Sydney, there was another attempt. And I think that's when he institutes the curfew or the police institute the curfew.
Someone attacked me in the bathroom at school. And so it's like, all right, we need to, until further notice, we're going to go on lockdown. There's a curfew and school is out. Mm-hmm. So Henry Winkler is left alone at the school with Freddy Krueger as the janitor.
Yeah.
And this is another one where I'm just kind of like, okay, sure, why not? Like, one of them is hiding in his office, I guess.
Yeah. And I don't like, why did they I guess they just don't like the principal, but he seems like such a superfluous character to kill. Cause it's like, what's the point?
I will say this midsection feels like it's got a lot of just sort of like fluff. It's got a lot of we need some stuff to happen just to keep the body count high and to have another scary sequence. Mm-hmm. And honestly, like the Henry Winkler sequence is like fine. It's
not bad.
But it's not great though. It's fine. No,
it just seems like, why is this in here?
We get a fun little like shot of like Ghostface in his eye as he, the reflection. Yeah. But even the mechanics of that scene don't make sense to me because he like leaves his office and we can see the office door and we don't see anyone go in there. Mm-hmm. And then he goes back into his office and they're behind the door. And I'm like, I don't know where they came from. I don't know how, so then it's time. It's party time this is when there's some silly stuff going on in this sequence too, where like Tatum and Sydney are talking on Sydney's front porch.
Yeah.
And then the camera like looks off in the background and Ghostface is like between some bushes.
I feel like this is definitely like the parody of it because like Halloween, you know, Michael's just like sitting there in the back and it's like, what is he doing there? Or like, can he hear them? And so this is just like a little, he almost looks like Sasquatch. Like
honestly, there's a few of these. Like there's one where they're at a store and they're like, they're like buying stuff from the store and they close the door of the fridge. And in the reflection, you see him like pop out. And it's like, it's honestly like pretty silly.
This definitely felt like the parody of it.
Cause it's also like, wait, did no one in the store see a guy come in that costume and like follow these girls? It's just weird. Daylight. It's just not very like believable or that's where you can kind of go, the movie's not taking itself super seriously. It's having some fun. Then we go to Stu's house and this is just, it's a fantastic finale here.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah. first one up is Tatum. All the kids are like, what? The Halloween is playing on TV, but Randy shows up with, I mean, we missed a scene of Randy at the video store with Stu talking about everybody's a suspect. And, you know, and I do like that scene. I like the way that Billy and Stu sort of corner Randy and like, and you know, Stu's got his arms around Randy's head and Billy, but like, again, like Kevin Williamson is pretty heavy handed being like, it's these two guys. When you, on rewatch, like it's not subtle at all.
No,
people don't get it. On the first watch, you know?
No. It's that is what I love too. I'm like, wow, this is very obvious, but I did not get it the first time. Like you never really know who it is. So
I almost think making it as obvious as he makes it makes you think it's probably not them.
Yeah.
Because they're so overt and you're like, nah, that's a misdirect. That's a red herring, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they're just being teenage boys. They're kind of bullying Randy, but that doesn't mean they're killers, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, So Randy brings some scary movies for people to watch. They decide to watch Halloween. Tatum goes into the garage to get some more beers. And there's this nice sequence in here where, again, the movie's constantly giving alibis to Billy and Stu at different times. Like, we know Stu is still partying. Like he's in there with his robe on and stuff, but somebody follows Tatum to the garage and we don't know who. And it can't be Stu because Stu's in there, you know, being a host. And this is a fun sequence that, Scary Movie made fun of and stuff, but I always thought the practical effect here looked kind of silly. And the physics of this are pretty silly. And
there's, this again kind of goes into the parody thing because she's getting beers out of the fridge and she's got a bunch of them. And then she sees Ghostface at the door where she just came from. And she's like, she's like, Stu, is that you? Or does she think it's Randy or something? Yeah. And she just thinks it's one of them. And she's like, is this when you kill the girl? Or I can't even remember what she says, but then he grabs her arm.
Please don't kill me, Mr. Ghostface.
That's right. And she drops all the beers and then it becomes apparent that this guy is going to kill her.
I do like that turn that she assumes it's just some kid at the party messing around. But when he grabs her arm and takes his knife out and slowly cuts her arm, it's like, okay, well that's serious.
But and she throws the beers at him. She definitely hits him in the nuts. Like
I like the way that the various ghost faces get beat up in this movie.
I like that as well. It's, again, it's kind of like this Michael Myers, you can't do anything to.
Yeah.
You know, he's just, he's
this force.
Can't kill him.
And Jason's kind of the same way. He's like a force that can't be stopped.
Yeah. But this is like, you hear him getting hurt. You can hurt, you know, a lot of times he gets kicked off of the person and so it makes him a lot more human.
Yeah.
Which makes it even more realistically scary.
Yeah, I like when she opens the top fridge door into his face and kind of clotheslines him with the fridge, you know, but she tries to get out through the doggy door of the garage.
Yeah.
And this is where it's like the garage would not, they have an automatic garage opener and it's like a garage would not open if a person was hanging their full weight on it.
No, it's not even nowhere near strong enough to pull a human up and to kill them and nearly decapitate them.
Yeah, but it's and this is where like the movie is, it starts just having some like fun with its kills here.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things that are just like silly and over the top. And I think this whole ending sequence is a lot of fun. Tatum gets her head smashed in the garage door. We go back into the party. Randy's explaining the rules to everyone because people, so you guys don't know the rules? And so he's explaining how you never say, you never have sex. That's a big rule.
That's a big one.
And he goes, and you never under any circumstances, you're not supposed to do drugs. You're not supposed to drink and do drugs.
Right.
That's another big one.
Yeah.
And you never under any circumstances say, I'll be right back because you won't be back. Yeah. And that's a, you know, there's like a line in Halloween where a guy says, I'll be right back. And
So Stu's like, oh, I'm going to get another beer. You want one? He's like, yeah, sure. He's like, I'll be right back.
Yeah.
Which is pretty great.
Yeah. And Stu knows that he can mess around because he knows he's safe.
And at this time, Sydney and Billy are upstairs in his in Stu's parents' room.
Yeah.
And they're
hooking up.
Hooking up.
They're breaking rule number one.
Breaking rule number one. They're sinning. Yeah. Yep. That's all. So like she's given into it. But then I think after this point, this is when, you know, so they're done hooking up. And
this is when Gail Weathers shows up, I think.
Oh, yeah. Gail comes in and she puts
we haven't even talked about Gail yet.
We haven't, no.
Gail Weathers is a big
punches her in the face way earlier in the movie.
Gail Weathers is a reporter played iconically by Courtney Cox. Yeah. She's in almost every single Scream movie. I think, spoiler alert, I think I'm pretty sure she died in the last one. But but she's in every Scream movie. And, you know, Dewey's in a lot of them as well. And Gail Weathers is this reporter who like wrote a book about Sydney's mother's murder. And
she thinks Cotton Weary is innocent, which she is correct in.
Yeah. And so Gail assumes because wherever Sydney Prescott is, that's where the killer is going to be. And she wants to get an exclusive on the next killing, which is really like callous and kind of soulless. She's really mean to her cameraman, Kenny.
Yeah.
I never liked that. But she decides to go to this party and hide a camera in Stu's house so that they can sort of monitor, and which is really messed up that they like want to get a murder on camera.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's weird that Gail becomes like a staple character in the franchise because she really is kind of like a ghoul in this first movie.
She's kind of a horrible person, and not kind of, she is a horrible person.
Yeah. But we find, you know, this is kind of like a fun little plot device that she puts this hidden camera in the house.
Yeah.
She and Dewey have a thing for each other, and Dewey goes into the house with her, and then they're walking around looking for this missing car. And, but we find out that there's a 30 second delay on this camera, and that becomes a plot device. But we're upstairs with Sydney and Billy.
Yeah.
And
She's questioning him. She's like, "Hey, who did you make your phone call to?" And he's like, "I made it to my dad." And she's like, "No, the sheriff called your dad." And he's like, "Well, what are you saying?" And she's like, "Well, I was just thinking like, oh, it would be a good way to throw me off the scent if you used your phone call to call me." And he's like, "When are you going to believe that I'm not the killer? Like, what do I have to do?" And then
Stu's right behind him.
And she's like, she gets scared. So Billy turns around and Ghostface is there and he slashes Billy and he's got two big blood strokes or whatever on his shirt. And he's like, "Sydney." And then he like falls down and pretends to be dead.
Yeah. And she runs away and she, you know, has a little chase through the house with Ghostface up into the attic. And she, you know, winds up falling out a window and all that, you know, like it, but again, it's like very conveniently choreographed that like Billy and Stu managed to get her in a position where Billy could turn his back. It's just all very, you know, whatever.
They planned it perfectly.
Yeah.
But that's,
And so she has a nice little chase scene with Ghostface here. But earlier, the thing that we missed is Kenny, who's Gail Weathers' cameraman, he's watching the footage from the hidden camera. And all the kids have gone home.
This happened. Yeah, this happens after the chase. Yep.
Well, because what happens is they find out that the principal's been murdered, and all the kids are like, "Let's go see it before they take the body down." So all the kids like run to the school to like see the prince, which is really, you know, dark and
gross. Oh yeah.
But it leaves Randy by himself, and Kenny sees on the camera that Ghostface is walking up behind Randy with the knife over his head. And Kenny's like, "I got to go help this kid, you know?" And
because Sydney is screaming.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And she screams and then she runs to the door of the van and they see that Randy's about to get stabbed.
That's right.
And then he's like, "Come in here, come in." And he shuts the door. And then he's like, "Oh no, we got to save that kid." And he opens the door and the front door has been opened. He says 30 second delay. Ghostface comes out and slits his throat.
Yeah.
And he just looks at Sydney and he's just got, you know, I mean, again, pretty gruesome.
That's a really good kill. The 30 second delay and just realizing, "Oh no, I'm too late."
Yeah.
And
But
this whole sequence, this chase scene is really good with Sydney crawling through the back of the van and then like running to Randy's or not Randy, Dewey's Jeep.
Jeep.
And yep. Ghostface being on the outside of the Jeep with the keys and mm-hmm. unlocking the doors and stuff. I felt like this reminded me of like when Zach Cregger did his thing in Weapons with the, it reminded me of this.
Yeah, that was good because she locks the door and this is obviously Stu. It has to be. And so he keeps like unlocking the doors, but he like he's at the window and he's holding the keys and then he just falls down. So she doesn't know where he is, which is great. And then he keeps kind of unlocking the doors. And then we see the rear gate open, you know, the trunk open.
Which honestly, when that happened, Olivia went, oh, and like covered her eyes. And I was like, good. Scene. I'm glad that still packs a punch. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, it is effective. And then he does pop up and they have this little scuffle, but she's able to get away. Like, she just get out of the car or does somebody does Randy show up?
I can't remember. I think she just gets. No. I think she just gets away, and she gets out.
She gets away,
and she's running toward the house. And Randy comes out of the house, and but he's sort of limping.
That's
and
then right.
He turns around, and he's got a knife in his back. And so,
Dewey.
Sorry, Dewey has a knife in his back, and that's when Randy and Stu
show up.
And we at this point, if it's your first time watching the movie. But I think we know at this point it's not Randy because Randy was watching the movie on the couch. So we're like, well, it's got to be Stu, like, or it's neither of them. And both of, you know, but this is like Sydney doesn't know who it is. And she goes inside and, you know, says like, screw both of you, closes the door, locks them out. And this is when Billy shows up at the top of the stairs.
Yep.
And, you know, and he kind of falls down the stairs and then, you know, he lets Stu and Randy in.
Well, and he's like, give me the gun because she got Dewey's gun. And so he's like, just give me the gun.
Yeah.
And then he lets Randy in.
And Randy says, he's a madman. Yeah. And Billy says, we all go a little mad sometimes, which is psycho. Anthony Perkins, psycho.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is when we realize, oh, it's been Billy the whole time. And then does Stu just come in? Stu just comes in with him, I think. And
yeah, at some point, like, I think Stu walks in like he's like a zombie, you know? And then he's like, hey, you know? Yeah. Stu's just like always goofing around.
Yeah. It's Matthew Lillard, right? Yeah. Matthew Lillard, he's great in this movie. He plays it really, really well in this second.
He's totally unhinged,
which I really like. I love it. Just works. Like, Matthew Lillard is always kind of an over actor.
Yeah.
And I'm not meaning that necessarily as bad as it sounds, but for this role, it works very, very well because he is a little, and there's something wrong with him, you know?
Yeah. Billy's like the quiet, sadistic, angry one. And Matthew and Stu's just the crazy one. Yeah. Stu's just the one who's just like, sounds like a rush, dude.
Yeah.
Let's do it. It's a scream.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to love it. It's a scream, baby.
Yeah.
You know, but like, then they, so they start kind of like bad guy monologuing and explaining to her like what the plan is. And that they're like, oh yeah. So here's the ending of the film.
Yeah.
Your dad, driven nuts by the death of your mom, goes crazy, turns into a serial killer a year later, kills you, tries to kill me and Stu, but we managed to kill him and get away. We're the only ones left alive.
He shoots himself in the head, right? He tried. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Shoots himself in the head.
Yeah.
You know, and then he's like, but we're left alive because there's got to be some people to set up the sequel. And that, you know, Matthew Lillard, because in this day and age, you got to have a sequel.
Yeah.
You know, which like all this meta commentary on the movie and like that, that like Billy and Stu are, at least Billy in his mind is making a movie. He's making in his mind. He's crafting this whole thing as a movie.
Yeah.
But I don't mind them monologuing here because it feels like they always wanted their plan to land here.
Yeah.
They always. Yeah.
Well, and they will kill her, but they do. And they will kill her, but they have to keep themselves alive. And again, it just kind of goes into this, like, I guess they really are just trying to terrorize Sydney because Billy does say, because Sydney's like, what's the motive? Like, why did you want to do this? And Billy says there is no motive. But then he says, well, your mother slept with my father and that caused my mother to abandon me.
Which also winds up bleeding into the second film, because in the second film, Billy's mom is the killer.
Yeah, it's, spoiler. Yeah.
Spoiler.
Yeah.
Played by Laurie Metcalf, of all people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. What's his name is the other killer, right?
He was just an alien Earth.
He was, yeah. Oh my gosh. I just had his name too.
It's right. Oliphant.
Timothy Oliphant. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's like an animal, elephant.
yeah, Oliphant, yeah. So that's kind of the motive. And I did wonder if Stu knew this, because it seems like a surprise to Stu.
Yeah.
I don't know if you caught that or if you thought that.
I didn't catch that. That's interesting.
Kind of just thought, and it's not a big deal either way, but I kind of thought, like, because he's like, there is no motive. That's what makes it so interesting and more terrifying, right?
But
then he does let it slip, and Stu's kind of like,
I thought we were just killing people.
Yeah.
But also, this is maybe the most disturbing thing about Billy and Stu to me, is the part of the plan where they agree to stab each other, but not mortally wound each other, so that they can believably look like victims. And this sequence always just got under my skin, of like these two teenage boys like stabbing each other with the knife. So like the way that they do it, like when Stu's like, come on, hit me.
Yeah,
I'm ready. Yeah. You know? But Billy gets mad because he feels like Stu stabbed him too deep. So Billy like stabs Stu like three times.
Yeah.
And then Matthew Lillard's acting here as he's like, you know, like he's like coughing up blood, and he's like, I think you cut me too deep, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, I think I'm dying. Yeah. Yeah. He plays it great.
Yeah.
Cause while they're arguing, Sydney gets away.
Like, yeah.
Sydney's able to, cause they show her the voice changer and she grabs that, and she grabs the gun Gail. Oh, sorry. We've got Gail grabs the gun.
Yeah.
And Gail is like, oh, you know, this is going to be all good. And cause Gail got in a car accident. She got in the car and drove, and
she drives,
she hits the tree.
Kenny falls down on the shield, which is really fun. Like, we're doing lots of, third act slasher movie tropes,
She comes back and she has the gun, but Billy, she has the safety on, so she can't fire it. So Billy grabs it from her. And that's when Sydney is able to, he hits Gail, and then they put the gun down. I can't remember how, but Sydney gets away with the gun.
Yeah. Yeah. And once she disappears, she calls them on the phone, and she's
it's like, want to play a game? Like,
how about I'll tell you my ending of my movie, you know?
Yeah.
Sydney pops out and stabs Billy a few times with an umbrella, which I always thought was like, ooh, that's brutal. Like, it's like a blunt object. Oh,
yeah.
But it always bothered me that she sort of like is satisfied with like a couple stabs with this thing. I'm like, hey, you gotta go harder. And then she has a chase scene with Stu. He chases her around, and Stu kind of falls over underneath the TV. This is a very good, just like fun little visual image of like taking a John Carpenter movie on the screen, like the kind of like one of the most famous slasher movies in the genre, and pushing it on top of Stu's head.
Yeah. Pretty great death for the killer, you know? And then Randy had gotten shot, but he's like, oh, this is the time, you know, be careful. This is the point when the killer comes back for one more scare. And Billy goes, bah. And Sydney shoots him in the head. She goes, not in my movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, wow. And then everybody kind of.
Then her dad pops out of the closet, and that's kind of our last like jump scare. It's like, oh, you know, but it's her dad tied up. And so,
And he's okay.
We have Gail reporting on what happened, and we sort of just pull Crane away, and that's the movie.
And then they did have a weird, I never see this in movies, but like they have the credits, and then when they're billing the actors, they have their photos. So like, it's kind of weird. It's like they have the like freeze frame, like, you know, Nev Campbell and like,
Do that. They also do like the last little stinger, like one more, like it's like it like,
it's like, you
know, yeah, right before the end credits, there's like one more like ghost face jumping, you know.
Yeah.
Um, But yeah, I mean, you know, pretty fun movie.
Yeah.
Pretty good time. Let's get into scores.
Yeah, let's get into
wrap this one up. If this is your first time watching our show, we give movies scores out of 10, 10 being the best. We give a score for technical rating. Just how good did we think the film did technically, but from a craft perspective? We give a score for the ending of the film. How well did they stick the landing? We give a score for rewatchability. We give a score for cultural significance and impact. And we give a score for our just subjective feeling. So Kramer, what is your technical rating for Scream?
My technical rating, I'm giving a 7. It's a fun movie. And, the cinematography, I don't necessarily love.
It's pretty
flat. Like it's not like it's anything stylized, which is not bad. That's more of a personal preference for me. But the script is good, but there are those kind of fluff moments in the second act that like, why is this here? And like, is this really so, but it's done. I mean, they are kind of reinventing the genre. So I think it's done pretty well.
Which is why I give it an 8 technically. Yeah. Is what they managed to do with the balancing of the tones and like the subtlety of the satire, while like being able to satirize the genre while still making it funny. I think mm-hmm. that there are performances in the film that are kind of iconic. Like I think that like
yeah.
this film kind of made Neve Campbell's career. And I think that like, you know, I'm not sure that Matthew Lillard's ever been more interesting in a film than in yeah. this one. And yeah. And Smelrick too. It's like he was kind of like a weird, hot, bad boy in a lot of 90s movies, but like this is the definitive one, you know. Mm-hmm. And yep. they go on in the franchise. Like Sarah Michelle Gellar in the sequel has a really iconic scene. Drew Barrymore's opening is iconic. I feel like Wes Craven really did take this genre and make it feel like, what if this happened in real life? If yeah, the movies came yeah. off the screen and which made the movie, which is kind of like, I think what makes this movie work for me.
Yeah.
I maybe dock a few points for that middle section where it's just sort of like, yeah. we're waiting to get to the ending. Right. But how about the ending for you?
The ending I gave a 9, and I'm giving it mainly again, from once they get to Stu's house on, it's like so fun. It's yeah. such a, like everything just kind of hits and it all flows together really, really well. And the tension is really high. And even though some of the stuff is ridiculous, I think it's purposefully ridiculous. So, and you know, killing Billy, like one last scare and, you know, not in my movie, some great lines, some great stuff that just makes the movie. I think the ending saves this movie in a big way. And it makes it all come together. It makes it all a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I gave the ending a 9 as well, all the same reasons. I just think yeah. that, yeah, like the whole, and just like the movie doesn't waste any time getting started in the first scene, as soon as it's over, it's over. Like mm-hmm. they kill Billy, Sydney's dad pops out, everyone's okay, we crane yeah. up, we're done. Like yep. we don't, you know, out it's over. Night, yep. Really, really clean. So really, really solid ending. How about rewatchability?
Rewatchability, I gave a 7.5. It's definitely fun to watch again because you can see, you pick up on things, you know, it definitely helps when you rewatch it, but it's also, I watch it and I'm like, oh, this is a little cheesy or this is a little weird how they did it. It is very 90s. Some of the stuff doesn't hold up as well, but still a fun movie to watch for sure.
Yeah. I gave it, a 8. It's a movie I've been rewatching consistently for the last 30 years. I've watched it many times and I always do find new details. So I think there's plenty to see. The thing that I would say it maybe loses on rewatch is like, it gets a little less scary every time just because, you just know what's coming next. And, but that's sort of with all of these films. How about cultural significance and impact?
Maybe I should give this more, but I'm giving it a 9.
Yeah.
Because it really did reinvent the genre, like it revived it. You know, there were a bunch of slasher movies after this and it's obviously made, how many is it? 6. And now they're making the 7th.
Yeah. And I mean, this, I know what you did last summer and like yeah. Urban Legend and all of the movies yep. that came after this, that tried to be this. Yep. It's sort of how, like we talked about with Blair Witch Project, that like it made this big boom with that genre, but no one could do it quite as well as they did it. And I feel the same way about Scream. It's like, I Know What You Did Last Summer is not as good as Scream.
No.
And, you know.
Also written by Kevin Williamson.
Yeah, not as good.
No.
Yeah. Mine is cultural impact is 9.5.
Yeah.
Just because I think, you know, 30 years later, the film's got a lot of staying power. I'd say it has just as much weight and staying power in the genre as like Halloween. I think Ghostface has earned his place amongst the famous cinema. Like when you think about like the famous cinema slashers, it's Freddy, Jason, and Michael, and Ghostface. And like hook hand guy from I Know What You Did Last Summer is not even in there. No one cares about him.
No, he's not. Yeah.
No one cares about urban legend guy, whoever that is.
It turned out to be a woman.
Yeah. I wouldn't even put like Jigsaw in there. I don't even know. But Ghostface
is in there for sure. He is a horror icon.
Yeah. So how about your subjective score?
My subjective score is a 7.5. I really like this movie. I think it's a lot of fun to watch and rewatch. There are, as I've said before, kind of on rewatch, some of the stuff doesn't hold up as well. The second act is a little fluffy, but it's still a very enjoyable movie.
Yeah, I gave it an 8.5. Just there's a nostalgia factor. I like how aggressively 90s this movie is. Yeah. I always enjoy it when I watch it. It's an easy watch. It for the most part flows really well, other than that kind of middle section. And I always really enjoy it and always find new things to kind of dig into on rewatch. So what do you think about Scream and the Scream franchise? Let us know in the comments. Sound off. Next week we are going to be watching Chris Stuckman's new film, Shelby Oaks. We're going out of the 90s and into the present. A lot of people on YouTube are talking about Shelby Oaks because it's a YouTube movie critic who made a movie, and people want to talk about, can the movie critic make a good movie? And people have a lot of things to say about this movie. There are mixed opinions about this. Yeah. So
I'm trying to go in blind. So it'll be interesting to see. Yeah.
I'm excited to find out, you know, I'm trying as much as I can to just not let my opinion be tainted by the different things that I've heard. But that's what we're watching. So go to the theater and watch Shelby Oaks if you want to watch along with the show. Give us a like, share, comment, subscribe, all those good things. Tell your friends about the show. And we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.